Welcome to Three and Out, your national NFL podcast. It is time, of course, for our Monday night live show. All of a sudden, of course, this time we don't actually have any Monday night football to watch live with you. We are just going to be chopping it up, reacting to the latest NFL news, covering some of the stuff that we covered in our key takeaways, covering a lot of stuff that we didn't, and of course, covering whatever you guys want to talk about. I see Shadi is already in the room. Shadi, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Just trying to see if there's anything we can be live watching. Like, there's some college basketball, some Australian Open. Rachel Maddow's on. Like, what do we even do here, guys? I'm not 100%.
You said Australian Open, and for a second, it's like Australian football, because I'd absolutely crush some Aussie rules right now. That would be fantastic. I don't know if tennis. I don't know if I can add much to tennis. You know what I mean?
No, I can add nothing. There was an interesting. I had some conversations while I was in Dallas for the College Gridiron Showcase. There is a new rugby league starting up. Sports agency that literally nice. Has their entire client roster is just rugby players and Jordan Mailata. Because Jordan Mailata came over from rugby, it was just an interesting little fun thing. But rugby is trying to make its way into the United States, and I am absolutely here for it because rugby is a great sport. And I actually was just talking about with someone else that the next big change in the NFL is probably going to be a lot more laterals.
We're
starting to see that more in the high school and college football, that we're starting to see a lot more plays where we're laddering the ball down the field. And I think that might make its way to the NFL in the next decade, which will be fun to watch.
Hey, Packers 12, I see your request to get on. But first, of course, I want to get on our other co-host, our third host, Samantha Bunton, of course, from NBC Sports.
I'm okay. I have nothing to contribute to the tennis conversation. So,
for the tennis conversation starts and stops with, I have nothing to contribute to the tennis conversation. So I think we're all good there. You know, the Packers fans out there who may have listened to the key takeaways already that dropped in our feed, Three and Out, of course, 3outpod.com, 3outpod on Twitter, 3outpod on Instagram, 3andOut, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, etc. You may have some things to say. So Packers 12, I'm going to let you kick things off. Want to jump up on stage, and what do you get to say? Packers 12, you there? Okay. So those of you who listened to Key Takeaways, we went in a little bit on Aaron Rodgers, as we are wont to do. And it's nothing against Packers fans necessarily, although it may be against certain Packers fans in our lives, depending. I'm up here from Michigan. Shadi spent some time in Michigan and in Minnesota. Packers fans, especially those who didn't live through the 70s and early to mid 80s, have a bit of an attitude about certain things. I don't want to use the entitlement word, but the E word might pop up here and there as well. So some of us were chortling a little bit to see things go down the way they went down in Green Bay, in Lambeau. And we talked about that a little bit. Guys, I haven't seen any more further news break or rumblings about how things might go. Is there anything else out there about Green Bay, about the fallout from this loss?
There was that press conference today. Matt LaFleur kind of played dumb when he started talking about rebuilding. I think that there is a little bit of... We talked a lot in recent years about how the Seattle Seahawks have just remained numb to the realities staring them in the face. First, it was Tom Cable in the offensive line. This year, it was just all of the things going wrong that they didn't seem to want to address. Matt LaFleur seems to have a little bit of that in his blood as well, because he's talking about how it's not going to be a rebuild. He doesn't see that happening. But even just last night, Aaron Rodgers was like, yeah, this is basically all over. We don't have enough money to re-sign any guys, blah, blah, blah. So I think there's a lot of things coming down the pike.
I don't want to stick around through a rebuild.
Yeah.
He also said that.
Yeah, so I don't think Matt LaFleur is quite playing it straight here, but at the same time, you know, maybe wishful thinking. Like, the Pittsburgh Steelers have never had to rebuild in the last, like, 20 years, so maybe he's thinking that.
I have a hard time equating Green Bay's system with that of the Steelers. Sorry, I'm sure all of your Packer fan out there just completely hates me, but it's not really about you guys. You guys aren't the problem. It's the people in your organization that are a problem. I don't really trust Matt LaFleur as a coach or as a leader or any such thing. Aren't we all kind of at the mercy of Aaron Rodgers on this? I mean, I hate saying it because I'm so sick of this guy and I'm thinking, oh, good, he's out. We'll get a break from him. But now the wheels turn, right? And now it's like, oh, is he going to retire? Is he going to go somewhere else? Like, probably. I don't know. But I mean, isn't everybody just kind of sitting around and waiting for this guy to make a choice? I'm not sure the Packers can really move forward. I don't think they're going to move forward independently of him. So he's going to be the one making the call.
All right. I want to get Xfinity Man want to jump up into the audience or onto the stage, and that's cool. I want to shout out Metal World Peace Pipe, Breitbart Star, and Rush Lambeau are really, really exceptional. Both of them, excellent, excellent nicknames. I put both of those ahead of Throw Rogan, as much as I enjoy Throw Rogan. So Xfinity Man, how you doing tonight?
I'm okay, you guys.
Good. How's it going?
Well, just trying to get back into the work week, I guess. But
for sure,
after that whole weekend of crazy football,
unbelievable.
I mean, field goals, basically. Well, okay. That Packers fan, when I ask about what Tom Brady's going to do, he just says Tom Brady sucks. I was going to be snarky and say, is this from the guy who's got the Packers-related quarterback? Because Aaron Rodgers, I feel like, you know, it's almost as if he's kind of like a disingenuous version of Peyton Manning, where you have all this regular season success, but the postseason, other than one Super Bowl, because even before he had his first Super Bowl win, he struggled in the playoffs as well. And then afterwards, it's like he did struggle again, and he's got even a worse, you know, his playoff postseason record has been, I mean, for whatever reason, he's not done well in the playoffs. And he's been to how many conference championships since the Super Bowl? Hasn't gone to another Super Bowl since.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for me, I'm usually not a count the rings type guy. I'm not usually a QB wins type guy. But the fact of the matter is, when you are one of the best, if not the best, quarterbacks in the league every single year for, like, 11, 12, 13, 14 years, and all of your postseason success came right at the beginning of that. And even if you're arguably a better quarterback overall, even though the team has done its best to build around you and put great players around you, and even though you keep winning the division over and over and over, you never get any farther than the second round or, you know, the conference championship game every once in a while. You definitely start to point it and go, and especially I think in this game, you can point at real spots where Aaron Rodgers, maybe he wasn't the problem, but he was part of the problem. And that has got to be worrying if you're the Green Bay Packers. You know, even if this all comes back together somehow, you work a bunch of...
Well, and I don't know if... I mean, part of the reason we keep having the ring counting discussion with Rodgers is, and this is, you know, I love to blame things on Aaron Rodgers, but this is actually not even Rodgers' fault. It's because we have this huge contingent of people that keeps putting it out there that, well, if Rodgers was with Belichick on the Patriots, he'd have 8 Super Bowls. And this narrative just persists and persists and persists. And it's obnoxious because, like, hypothetical greatness, as I said on Twitter the other day, is the worst argument for greatness. So that's part of the reason that this keeps coming up, is because people keep making it a thing. And this is not even about Rodgers. And I don't think anybody here, no matter what else we think about him, would say, oh, he's a failure as a quarterback. He's anything other than a Hall of Famer. We all think he deserves to win the MVP this year, even though, Ty, you and I have some thoughts on postseason performance and how that impacts that. But, like, I think it's more that we need to stop looking at this organization as this sort of mythic thing. It's almost looked at as like dynastic, but they don't have the wins to back it up. And that's why this keeps coming up, is because there's a narrative out there that just persists and persists and persists about the Packers that just doesn't exist in reality. And that's why we keep having to have this conversation. And as much as, like I said, I'd love to blame it on Rodgers, because I love blaming anything I can on Aaron Rodgers, like, he's not really the cause of that.
Yeah, and, you know, Samantha, you said this during Key Takeaways this morning, that, you know, being in the NFC North, the Packers have consistently been, you know, an 8, 9, 10 win team, mostly because they get to play 6 games against, like, the worst of the worst opponents most years. Like, the Vikings are only randomly good. The Bears, you know, are, you know, sub 500 most of the time. The Lions are sub 500 almost all of the time. So you have almost a boost to your regular season record every single season. And then if you just go 500 the rest of the way, like, you're sitting pretty, and all of a sudden you're a higher seed in the playoffs without really having to do as much as maybe the Tom Brady's and Peyton Manning's and Patrick Mahomes of the world over the last, you know, couple decades have had to do. And I agree with that to a point. At the same time, I think there's something to be said for Aaron Rodgers being that factor that has kept the Packers at the top of the NFC North during that entire time when other, you know, cold weather teams ebb and flow, because you have to have a dynastic quarterback to keep something like that going when you're a place that not many free agents really want to go to. Like, free agents are not begging to go ride bicycles around during training camp in Green Bay. Like, it's nice and it's kitschy and it's quaint, and there are always going to be players that want to play there for, I think, the weirdest of reasons. I was talking with Reese Waters today on 980 The Team in Washington, D.C., and it's like, yeah, like, so there are certain types of, like, special kind of guys, like, whether you grew up in Wisconsin or grew up in the Midwest, there's always that hallowed aura around Lambeau Field and around all the history there. Like, that makes sense for, like, 10% of guys. Everyone else wants to go to places like South Beach and warm weather areas and big cities. And, you know, you can even hear, like, in Aaron Rodgers' tone that he wants that sort of thing. So I think that there is something to be said for respecting what Aaron Rodgers has done as a football player. And off the field, you know, he can go kick rocks. As a football player, I think he's done this thing in Green Bay. He's taken them so far. But I think if you also sort of removed that out of context, if you put the Green Bay Packers in the AFC South or in the AFC West, they're basically the Chargers, or they're basically, you know, at best the Colts, you know, a team that we're going to talk about in the regular season and then what? Because we're already seeing that. We see that in the NFC, where he can't get out of the second or third round. You know, it's just like all of the other teams. When you look at the quarterbacks who have been in the AFC Championship and in the Super Bowl for the past decade, it's the same 4 or 5 guys over and over and over. And it's a little bit more wide open in the NFC. But honestly, if you took the Packers with Aaron Rodgers over the past decade, put them in the AFC, they're never getting out of the first round. Like, there's no chance, because they're consistently a lower round seed, because they don't win as many games. And then they're constantly getting knocked out by the, you know, Mahomes, Josh Allen's, even in his heyday, the Ben Roethlisberger's of the world. Like, this just has not been a great team. They've been consistently a very good team. But in the NFL, you know, if we're chasing rings, if we're talking about quote-unquote QB wins with a Z, like, Aaron Rodgers doesn't have them.
I think I was going to compare the Packers to my favorite, like, generational, we the fans and media and like national memory of the sport insist to 22-year-olds that they must love this tradition that they have not been alive for. But I think, like, the Knicks, it always cracks me up, because you see this in the basketball media and the New York media, you know, every kid that gets drafted onto the Knicks, that the media gets like, oh, how grateful are you to be able to play in this holy temple of basketball, this legendary facility that, you know, hasn't seen meaningful sports played in it since the 90s. You know, just listen to the floorboards and you can hear John Starks. It's like, okay.
And has corners of the locker room that haven't been cleaned since.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, you know, Lambeau, obviously, I think the difference there is that, like, you know, in New York, people have other things to do, right? Like, the Knicks will be relevant again when they're contending for titles again. The greater Green Bay Appleton area TV market will never have anything other to do than worship the Packers. So there will always be that different edge there. And some people are attracted to it. You know, some guys do like that vibe. Some people do love that, like, you know, big fish in a small pond type vibe. But like you said, there are other teams like, hey, like, where is there no sales tax? Where can I have a pool that backs up to the ocean? You know, that is not going to be Green Bay and never is going to be Green Bay. ClickBoy has been very patient. ClickBoy, your request is not active. So if you still want to jump up into the room, go ahead and hit it. There we go. All right, ClickBoy, you're very patient while we motor mouth about the Packers, because that's just what we do. But yeah, ClickBoy, how you doing?
I'm doing good, guys, and you?
We are doing awesome. Always fun to hang out with you guys, and we don't have a game to talk about. So this is, you guys are the stars of the show. What did you want to talk about tonight?
I wanted to piggyback off the Packers thing and Aaron Rodgers. I think that he's going to retire a Packer. I don't think he's going to leave. I don't think he's going to go to another team anytime soon. I think that he's going to retire a Packer. And I don't think he's going to leave this season either, this next season. I think he's going to stay.
You know, that's certainly, you know, when things are going great in the middle of the season, that's what it looked like, right? It was like, oh, hey, like, all the rumors are, like, maybe we find ways to do it. You know, maybe whatever. It seems, of course, but winning cures all ills and winning makes things look good. Now you're sitting here going, how are we going to cut $44 million out of this cap before we re-sign Devontae Adams? Meta World Peace Pipe, bringing you in. How you doing today, Mike?
I'm good. Yeah, first time, long time. I want to switch gears for just a second here, talking about that Chiefs-Bills game. You know, at what point do we start asking the question, does Josh Allen have the clutch gene? A lot of talk about his performance on the field, but he kind of failed at that coin toss, so I want to get your thoughts on that.
was he out there for playing, you know, nickel? Was he supposed to be covering Travis Kelce on that last 13-second drive? Oh boy,
he didn't pick tails, guys. Like, right. how it rhymes. Tails never fails. Like, how often do we have to go through?
Or who decided not to put that kickoff on the ground there with just
special
a couple
teams
seconds left
coordinator
on the clock?
Josh Allen.
Huh? Yes, Josh Allen, kicker, holder, special teams coordinator, long snapper, the whole nine. Oh boy. Oh boy. I bought a Josh Allen jersey today, you guys.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because to celebrate awesome in defeat. So it means more to me now than it would have after a win. It's loser mentality. I'm from Cleveland, you guys. You have to understand how I work here.
I see Taco Sriracha just joined. What's up, Taco Sriracha? Yeah, and of course, I think we talked about this earlier on Key Takeaways. Like, we're all Rust Belt people here, right? Like we all come from the sort of, you know, they called it the cradle of coaches. I call it the cradle of bloggers. You know, the Michigan, Ohio, Minnesota, that kind of swath really accounts for a huge amount of great sports writers and great bloggers. And you know, we certainly fit into that tradition. But it's like you want to see somebody from Buffalo do well. You want to see Bills Mafia do well after the game they put together against the Patriots and everything they did against the Chiefs. Yeah,
I was today years old when I learned that Heath Farwell is the Bills special team coordinator. Like, he was playing in the league 5 years ago,
yeah.
6 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, and he was a special teams ace. But like, when Samantha was making the joke about Josh Allen, like, oh, who is the special teams coordinator? If you would have told me is Heath Farwell in the NFL, I'd have been like, yeah, he's probably like on the Saints. Like, I would have thought he was still playing because that guy played forever. So, yeah, that's who made that decision.
Isn't that the mark of special teams, right? We learn their names when they screw something up.
1,000%. With Heath, it was like we learned his name because he would make like 40 special teams tackles a season. Like, he was that dude. But at the same time, yeah, he probably would love to remain anonymous.
Yeah, this is so tough because Josh Allen actually did pull off some unbelievably clutch plays, you know, third downs, fourth down, you know, fourth and 14 to get that touchdown. And like, it's going to be so hard to remember that he did that. And you know, I don't want to necessarily reopen the whole overtime can of worms debate. But you know, again, we went extensively over that on Key Takeaways, but Mike Freeman, a former colleague of ours, said, oh, for the like Bills should have made a stop crowd, like there was no way they were stopping Patrick Mahomes at that level. It's like, okay, yeah, well then they weren't going to stop it with an extra possession either. And the Chiefs weren't going to stop Josh Allen with an extra possession either. And the Bills weren't going to stop Patrick Mahomes with an extra, like there was no end to that rabbit hole, right? Eventually it was just going to be 20 guys on the field, like puking and collapsed and twitching while Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes just like scored touchdowns on each other at the same time over and over. And the scoreboard, you know, clicked over past 100 and, you know, doesn't have triple digits on the scoreboard. So it's back over to seven. They roll the odometer over. Like there was nothing wrong with anything Josh Allen.
So I do wonder if this is going to end up having a lot to do with whether or not the Chiefs, you know, finish the story and win the Super Bowl. Because if the Chiefs finish the story and win the Super Bowl, I think you're right that the Bills and Josh Allen do just become a footnote. But I also think there's a world in which, you know, they don't win this weekend or they don't win the Super Bowl. Like, they're still a imperfect team that has games, plenty of games that aren't quite like this. And I've compared this game like three or four different times. I don't remember if I did it specifically during Key Takeaways this morning, but to me, this just felt and has shades of like the 1988 Eastern Conference Championship where Larry Bird and Dominic Wilkins just like lit it up and like scored 40 points apiece. And there was like this long stretch of the game where neither team or neither superstar could miss. And it's like this hallowed game in basketball circles. And it's like an Eastern Conference semifinal game. Like neither team, you know, won a championship that night. I honestly do not remember who won. I think it was the Celtics, but like all I remember is watching that game as a kid, like on ESPN Classic, and just being enthralled with, oh, this is how basketball is supposed to look. If every basketball game looked like this, I would love basketball. And then I was a Pistons fan, so I never saw a made field goal for like the rest of my basketball life. But like that was last night. That was everything Mahomes and Allen connected on, was just the way football is supposed to look for like a good 20 minutes span of game time. And that's perfect. And I'm going to remember that. And I think we do the game a disservice if we just remember that the Chiefs won the game. That really boils it down to that QB wins with a Z crowd. That I think we can just remember this game as like two teams playing perfect offensive football for, you know, the better.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's part of why I don't love the overtime argument, because I hate to see a game that is one of the greatest postseason games that we have ever seen reduced to a rule change argument. And again, you know, like I get it. And I think the Chiefs have to be the first ones to admit that they get it too, because it was them stumping for the same rule that they just benefited from a couple of years ago when it was the Patriots doing it to them. So, I mean, yeah, we all get it, and I understand it, and I don't want to belabor this again because, like you said, we don't want to reduce this game to this, and we talked about it a lot on Key Takeaways, but, I mean, this was, like, an incredible football game. I mean, I was super bummed because I had a little bit of a rooting interest in it, but when you get some distance on it, you know, I slept on it, and last night I was like, don't tweet, you're going to regret it, don't tweet. So I didn't. I went to sleep, and woke up, and you're like, you know what, that was amazing. Like, this is why the NFL is king, because this game was incredible, because we don't get this out of other sports. And as much as you all know how much I love baseball, but, like, when is the last time in any other sport you've seen anything like that? Basketball, baseball, nothing. It's not like it hasn't happened, but it happens pretty consistently in the NFL, and this was one for the ages. I mean, we're all going to remember this, and I hope that the reason we remember it is because it was this tremendous quarterback duel where just an unbelievable number of touchdowns in an unbelievably small amount of time instead of the game that caused yet another overtime debate.
Yeah, and Yeah, no, I agree. We want to be talking about this football. We want to be talking about the game. We want to talk about the unbelievable performances and the plays that are made. Of course, I'm always in favor of fixing something that's broken, but this is something that has been debated over and over and over and over and over. And, you know, when we do, like, this game felt like a duel between quarterbacks a lot more than some of the others. You know, when we talk about Brett Favre and Drew Brees in that NFC Championship game that caused this, you know, we really can't have Brett Favre watch as the Saints get like a good return and then a couple first downs and a couple defensive penalties and kick a field goal, you know, and just Brett Favre, Mr. Sad on the sidelines, like, oh, what a terrible look. We have to give him a chance. Can't allow that field goal to end that sudden death. It's like that wasn't a quarterback duel as much as this one was, right? So if there's any game that's going to force a rule change like that, it's going to be this one. But I just think ultimately this game was played within the framework of the rules, and that's why it was so exciting. You know, if there hadn't been 13 seconds left on the clock, if it hadn't been Patrick Mahomes, if it hadn't been, you know, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, like two of the very, very best in the business doing what they do, you know, it wouldn't have been as exciting. And I just, you know, for me, especially if you go back to like the college thing and go, all right, cool, well, now none of you have to cover any field. You get set up in the red zone and just, you know, run 2-point conversions over and over. You're like, ugh. No, like that's not true to the spirit of the game we just watched either, right? Like, let's just appreciate this for what it was, which is spectacular plays from spectacular players. And ultimately, to circle it all the way back around to the beginning with Aaron Rodgers and postseason success, it's like I do think we have come to put too much of an emphasis on it, where it's like, you know, Dan Marino, people when I was a kid were like, yeah, well, you know, Dan Marino, and it's always going to haunt him a little bit that he never got that ring. You know, it's never... That's always going to be a black mark on his resume, right? But his resume otherwise was an absolute mortal, stone-cold lock Hall of Fame resume. And he was up there on the Mount Rushmore with anybody else all the time. And I really think the emphasis on, like, hey, you know, sometimes the best team that you're on, you know, something goofy happens. There's a blocked punt. You know, there's a kick return. There's a punt return for a touchdown. There's any number of fluke things. You know, the game that determines the best chance you have in your life of getting to the Super Bowl is the one that gets played in a snowstorm and you know, something went goofy. And you know, if the Bills don't keep this team together, you know, if Brian Daboll leaves and Josh Allen isn't as good, and this was his best shot, it's not going to be his fault that he didn't convert. It's not going to be his fault. He's not going to be anti-clutch because he didn't win this game of all games.
I was going to say, I think that goes to even just the larger point. Like, do you think Dan Marino loses sleep at night that never won a Super Bowl? Like, maybe. When we're talking about his quote-unquote resume or his... When we're talking about, did Dan Marino live a fulfilling life as an NFL player? Like, I don't think he thinks about it. Like, you know, when it's Super Bowl time, like when he's at the game, does he, you know, maybe think about it? Sure. But like, you look at Dan Marino today, you look at Charles Barkley today, like, does anyone think they're leading anything less than a very fulfilling life, having been professional athletes and having made millions of dollars and having continued in the sport in various ways? Like, I just don't think that the... And maybe it's because I'm so active at lower levels of the sport. Like, when you spend your life trying to get to the NFL, and then you get to the NFL, and you live that life for 20 years or so, and you don't win the Super Bowl. Like, tons of players, millions of players don't win this. Fantastic players don't win the Super Bowl. I think we spend way too much fetishizing the guys who win and way less time just admitting that guys like Dan Marino are probably fine. Like, they are doing okay. Like, there is nothing inherently better about Tom Brady's life because he has 7 rings than Dan Marino's. Like, Dan Marino would probably not trade his life for any of Tom Brady's rings when really push comes to shove. Maybe to be married to Gisele Bündchen because she's a supermodel, but I think, again, Dan Marino's probably just doing
I'll say, hey, just, you know, we'll just put this out there. Dan Marino was awesome in Ace Ventura. A lot of former quarterbacks and contemporaries of his have not done as well in the TV and movie department. And then also, remember, Joe Montana got dressed back up in uniform for like a commercial like 6 or 7 years ago. And like, I remember that interview, like, I can't imagine Dan Marino being willing to look that desperate, you know, like Montana won all the rings you could hope to win. And he's still the one trying to cling to the glory days. Like Dan Marino, like you said, Dan Marino is doing just fine. I can't imagine Marino dressing up in full uniform at this point to be like, hey guys.
Well, I mean, we don't say laces out Joe. Like, that's the kind of pop culture exposure that you just can't buy. But anyway, as someone who was extremely fond of the Dolphins for inexplicable reasons, I have no idea why, as a child who was a big Dan Marino fan and still owns several Dolphins starter jackets from the 80s that came down to like my ankles because I was like six, I have spent my whole life like pounding the table for the Marino is the greatest pure passer of all time, and he's just as good as Montana, and we're too precious about rings. And I have learned one thing. I have learned a lot this season about like myself and the way that I am as a fan is that I don't care nearly as much about winning as a lot of people do, which is a lot to do with the Baker Mayfield argument and whether that I feel like I would rather walk away feeling like I liked a player and like they were giving their all with moderate success than to win at all costs. Like, I hate the mercenary aspect of it. So I think it bothers me in particular the way that we kind of like overly fetishize, and that's the perfect way to put it, like you did, Shadi, the rings. Because, yeah, Dan Marino's, he's fine. Like, I think he's doing just fine. I doubt he wants to be Tom Brady. I mean, we have this weird, like, fake narrative, and you see it in sports fiction all the time. Like, if you read a football novel, which I don't recommend because most of them are terrible, but I have tried, and they're all about the guy who couldn't win the one big game, and he's, like, 47 now, and it haunts him, and his marriage is falling apart, he's drinking too much, and he's the caretaker at the local high school field, and he's so bitter and angry because he never won the big one. And I was like, I don't think that's how that goes. Like, I feel like most of these guys, especially the ones who are Hall of Famers, in other words, like, I feel like they're pretty okay.
No, it absolutely goes the opposite, where, like, you watch Friday Night Lights, and it's all the state champions with their rings that are still clinging to that, like, 40 years later. And, it, again, like, if I'm looking today at Miami Dolphins from the past 100 years that I would absolutely pity, it's the dudes who had that perfect season that still pop champagne bottles every time the last team loses. Like I am not trading my life with those guys, even though they're quote unquote the perfect football team. Like, I would rather be Dan Marino day in, day out. And I think he would rather be Dan Marino too than to be, you know, Larry Zonka or any of those dudes who are still just clinging to something very cool, something very notable, something very awesome that everyone else should remember. But at the same time, like, don't you want to forget, like, if you're that great, if you had such a fantastic career, if you lived a great life both in the NFL and after the NFL, don't you want to kind of just forget every once in a while, like, not be that dude day in, day out? Because if all you have to cling to is that 1 year, like 40 years ago, like, is that living? Or is that just not dying? Because to me, it kind of seems like just not. 1,000%.
Like, that's like horrible. Instead of enjoying the accomplishment, you're worrying about when somebody else is going to, what, like, take a piece of the pie? Like, dude, it won't make you any less undefeated.
Well, maybe that's it's the insecurity, right, of the, like, you know, whatever becomes, look at the record of the teams that they played that year. Like, look at the, you know, they didn't have DVOA then, but, you know, Aaron Schatz is going to spend the rest of his life hunting down individual VHS tapes from, you know, people's basements and estate sales and trying to chart those games. I think, are they back to, like, 83 now? He's going to keep going. until it can get there. You know, and it's yeah, absolutely nothing to take away from that. But, you know, to me, if you do something great and somebody eventually surpasses you, you know, that reflects back on you too. You get some sense of that accomplishment. And I think, you know, honestly, you know, when like Barry Bonds passing Hank Aaron, you know, and Hank Aaron, they played that video message from him, and it's like, okay, even at that time, you were still going, okay, but Barry Bonds is obviously cheating his brains out, you know, okay.
But
you still got to connect that to, okay, this is what it was like then. When Hank Aaron was at his, you know, this is how many home runs he was hitting. This is what he had to do. And it's one thing for, you know, the old heads to tell you, oh, Hank Aaron, you know, he was great, or, you know, or, oh, you know, Maris and Ruth, you know, incredible. Like, nobody was telling you Roger Maris was like the best hitter of all time, but like, oh, that season, what was it like? Then we had Maguire Sosa, and you go, oh, okay, it was like this, right? Like, that's, I think when records are broken, it gives you that appreciation of what the initial record meant and what that achievement was. And I get that it was special for those guys, but yeah, like, what are you doing now? What are you doing? If you're so great, those guys were given, you know, motivational speeches. They were dining out on Perfectville or whatever into the 90s, you know, and it's like, all right, if you did something in 1972 and you're still sitting there in 1996 collecting $20,000 to go to, you know, a business conference and tell everyone how great you are, that you were perfect, and like what that meant to you and how you did it, and you've accomplished absolutely nothing else since, like, why am I sitting here listening to you tell me how to be successful in life?
Yeah, at some point it just evolves into old man telling stories, right? Like when you have an older relative who wants to tell you about a sport they played in high school, and you're like, okay, do you have like a funny story with a punchline here, or are we just like reliving your glory days? And I understand it from that perspective. And I feel like, okay, if it's your family member, your friend, your dad, your whatever, you have some responsibility to allow the person to do that. But like, as the general population of America, I'm not sure we're all responsible for like propping up the 72 Dolphins for the next 40 years. And it just seems sort of sad to me, the way that it's this like extremely fear driven, like, phew, man, we're still the guy. And you're like, you're still the what? Like, I don't think that like 18-year-old football fans are even aware that you exist.
Right. Go ahead, Chad.
But
go
ahead.
Boomer.
To tie it back to Dan Marino, like, there are generations of people who know who Dan Marino is because he was in Ace Ventura, or because he was in the Only Wanna Be With You video for the Hootie and the Blowfish. Like, I just think, you know, and to tie it back to Josh Allen, like, he's going to do fine. Like, we've got another, you know, 10 plus years of him probably on the Bills, if not, you know, in the NFL elsewhere. And he's going to do just fine. Like, he's clearly, at his age, going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL for the next decade plus. And does he ever get past Mahomes? Maybe, maybe not. Like, it would not be crazy for a fantastic Bills quarterback to not get past another fantastic team. You know, Jim Kelly lived that life. And again, Jim Kelly's doing just fine too. Like, Jim Kelly just kicked the shit out of cancer. Like, he's okay. Like it is what it is. Like, Jim Kelly can live a fantastic life, even get not winning the big one. Why not Josh Allen? Let Josh Allen be Josh Allen. Let Josh Allen be a superstar. Let Josh Allen be one of the best young quarterbacks we've seen. Let Josh Allen do all these fantastic, amazing things. Like, I'm just looking around. Like, I'd rather be Josh Allen than Aaron Rodgers. I would. You know, maybe Aaron Rodgers is the only person in life who doesn't agree with that statement. I think most of us would. Like, Aaron Rodgers has a ring, Josh Allen doesn't. I still take Josh Allen 10 times out of 10. I'd still rather be Josh Allen than Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger's won a big one. I'd still rather be Josh Allen, because I'm not a piece of crap if I'm Josh Allen. Josh Allen has a lot of things going for him. Winning the big one does not make you any more valuable of a human being. Like, Josh Allen's going to be just fine. And quite frankly, because of all this conversation, like, I hope he does win the big one. But if he doesn't, I think he's going to find solace in, you know, having a long, energetic NFL.
Well, and look at the relationship between Josh Allen and that fan base, especially in such a short amount of time. It's kind of incredible. It's one of the things that, and there are many that have made me absolutely love Josh Allen. Another reason to love Bills Mafia. But it's just really, really just, you know, it warms my cold heart that Aaron Rodgers can't even have that relationship with his own family, apparently. So, like, no, I would much rather be Josh Allen, and I would continue to rather be Josh Allen even if he never wins a Super Bowl. And it's not just because, you know, he's not, like, a piece of shit human, but also because I think there is, yes, of course you want to win, but there is so much more to this. And if all you do is win, and you are basically just tolerated by your own fan base, then the second you're out of the game, it's gone. I mean, exactly. And then if you're Josh Allen, like look at these guys who forge a special relationship with a city. I mean, even look at like the Julian Edelmans of the world and the relationship that he has to the Patriots fan base. Like, that guy is going to be able to trade on that forever. And I think that's how it's going to be for Josh Allen times 100, because he's a much more talented player and he's a quarterback. What is Aaron Rodgers' legacy? I mean, he's going to show up in however many years once he retires and get his gold jacket, and he'll get one more moment in the sun. But he's never going to be that person who is beloved in that way. And I think that has to matter to these guys, or at least so many of them talk like it does. I mean, I'm sure Aaron Rodgers tells himself he doesn't care. But, you know, since we're playing the who would I rather be game for every reason possible, Josh Allen, even if he never wins a thing.
Okay, so let's pivot this a little bit, because a couple of the things that we've talked about have kind of danced up against things that I have thought about a guy who has been clearly a very talented guy, had a great connection with the city and his teammates, hadn't won the big one or even come close, but now he's a lot closer than he's ever been, and that's Matthew Stafford, who, you know, I'm not going to put him up there with Marino. But, like, whatever the next rung down from Marino is in terms of best pure passer, in terms of arm talent, in terms of making throws that make you drop your jaw, you know, I've been trying to get people to pay attention to Matthew Stafford for years. And I think a lot of people who've covered the Lions or rooted for the Lions or watched have been on the same thing of, like, you guys want to put Stafford at, like, 12 or 14 or 15. And he's, like, 5 or 6 in a bad year and like maybe 3 in a good year, like in terms of like talent and skill and what he's doing. You know, you look at his Pro Football Focus grades, you look at some of the like DYAR and stuff like that. You know, he has gone out and had like legitimately MVP caliber seasons for teams that win 9 games, 10 games, 11 games, and you go, okay, like this guy has not been able to get the eyeballs on him, and now he's got the eyeballs on him, he's got the team, he's got the big signature win in the playoffs, head to head over Brady, knocks him out. And you know, now you're sitting here going, you've got, I mean, the 49ers are going to be a tough matchup for the Rams. They've beat him twice already this year, but this looks to be as easy a path. You know, it's not going to be Rodgers and Lambeau, it's not going to be Dak in AT&T Stadium, as non-formidable as that turned out to be. This is going to be about as easy a path for Stafford as it gets. And now I'm wondering, like, how much has this season and this win changed the narrative for people who didn't know about him or hadn't been following him or hadn't rated him, as they say in English?
Well, I would fundamentally disagree with you on the path. I think it would have been better for them to face the Packers than the 49ers. But we can get into that matchup stuff later. But I do agree with you on the rest of this. For Stafford, certainly, it was, I mean, it's. I thought I was the world's biggest like Stafford apologist, but Ty, you've beat me. but he, I mean, I hope the guy wins the Super Bowl. I hope he wins 5, you know, and you're right. I mean, so many of these guys, it's like we almost don't know what they can do because he's not a Josh Allen and he doesn't have that team around him. And he and I don't know, like he's certainly many rungs, someone's going to scream at me for this, but you know, Matt Ryan is the other guy who I think has gotten kind of a bad deal in this way. I think he is infinitely better than what he has been recognized as, or at least he was at his peak, and people never really gave him credit. And we just think, oh, Matt Ryan, chokers, 28-3, even though like, wasn't Matt Ryan really lost that game for them? And he's been a tremendously good quarterback, and Stafford has been even better. And I know we all make the joke about, well, we're waiting on that game-crushing Stafford interception, but like, I don't know. I don't think that's going to be the undoing of the Rams. I think there's a very good possibility they're just going to get beat next week, or maybe they'll win. But if they do lose, they may just kind of, you know, get outplayed. And the Rams secondary, I will say it again, that is my big concern. My concern is not whether Matthew Stafford throws an interception.
This is an interesting conversation because I'm just looking at the Pro Football Reference like leaderboards as we're talking, and you know, Matt Ryan is like 10,000 passing yards ahead of Matthew Stafford, and Matt Ryan is actually right behind Dan Marino.
Yo, and there it is.
I actually think Matt Ryan is probably a better Dan Marino comparison than Matthew Stafford, because Stafford has like 20,000 passing, or it's closer to 10,000.
But he's built like Dan Marino. They're the same, like, mudslide form. That's part of it.
That's fair, but he's still 11,000 yards away. Like, he's going to get there, but he's going to get there in, like, two or three more years, which he might have a couple Super Bowls by then. But, like, the one difference, I think, with Matthew Stafford, and it's really come out this season, it came out, you know, certain people, when they look at Matthew Stafford, have very polarizing opinions. I remember for the longest time, Bomani Jones like was running with the meme that basically Matthew Stafford and Cam Newton were the same person. Like, he would just take Cam Newton's stats and just superimpose them and be like, which quarterback is this? And everyone thought it was Cam Newton. And it's like, nope, that's actually Matthew Stafford, who you all sort of agree is one of the better passers in the NFL. And what, you're hating on Cam Newton because he's black? And probably, like, he had a point. Like, Matthew Stafford has always generally been regarded as a good, not great, but a good quarterback. He's just not in that same breath as the quote-unquote winners, the guys who have rings, the Aaron Rodgers and Ben Roethlisberger's and Eli Manning's and all those other group of, like, quarterbacks who probably aren't as naturally talented as Matthew Stafford is, but have been on winning teams, and so they get a little extra publicity because of it. I think Matthew Stafford, where he diverges from Marino, and I would even say Matt Ryan in this regard, is there are times where Stafford has been the problem. Like, we've seen games this season where it's like, oh my goodness, they either won in spite of Matthew Stafford or they lost because Matthew Stafford was bad. Like, we're going to make picks on Wednesday morning, and there's a really good chance my pick is going to be 49ers, because I think if there's any team in the league, and we've seen it twice this season already, that can slow Matthew Stafford down and make him have a really bad game, it's the 49ers. You go back, and Marino was never the issue. Like, Marino's teammates let him down. Marino was never, like, the singular issue they lost games. I don't think Matt Ryan has been the singular reason, maybe more often than Marino. He's had some clunkers, but it's not usually his fault. There are times he does not rise to the occasion, but there's very rarely, like, the inexplicable, like, pick sixes that Matthew Stafford has thrown. Marino was never not that dude. And I don't think, like, Jim Kelly was that dude either. I think there's lots of, like, really great NFL quarterbacks who weren't able to win a ring, and it was never necessarily their fault. Matthew Stafford has been in a very terrible situation. I think going to the Rams has made it really, you know, the rubber has met the road, where if the entire team around him is as good as the Rams are, there is no blaming Cam Akers. Like, there is no blaming Aaron Donald. There is no blaming Odell Beckham Jr. or Cooper Kupp. Like, it is Matthew Stafford from here on out. If they don't win, that's going to be on his legacy. If they lose because he throws a second pick in one of these games, that's his legacy. Now he's going to get plenty of other chances to do it because he's still relatively young. But I think, to me, that's the big difference. He has a lot of room to correct it at this point. Again, he probably ends up being, you know, top 7-ish or top 6-ish in total passing by the time he's done. So, of course, we're going to still talk about him in, you know, those hallowed tomes of being one of the best passers ever. But again, I think he's running out of excuses. He was never going to win with the Lions. I get that. But now that he's on the Rams, it's put up or shut up. Like, Matt Ryan had great Falcons teams. Matt Ryan had Julio Jones. Matt Ryan had, you know, Roddy White and plenty of great, you know, defenses and players around him and great offensive coordinators and plenty of times where they had opportunities and he couldn't really connect. That's Matthew Stafford's life now. And it's if Drew Brees hadn't been able to win, that would have been his life. But he was able to win a couple times. He was able to get to the big game. Matthew Stafford has to show that he can complete now. And I think there is something to be said for, does it make him a worse quarterback if he consistently gets to the championship game or consistently gets to the Super Bowl and lose? I don't think so. I think that's what we're talking about here. It doesn't make him, doesn't tarnish his legacy really in my mind. But I do think that he's put himself in that situation where it now is going to be part of the conversation that everyone else is talking about. And whether or not 30 years from now, he feels like he somehow lost something about his life because he didn't connect, maybe, but I still doubt it. But I do think it's what we're going to be talking about if he doesn't win these next two games.
Yeah, and I think that's where you get out to. You know, Stafford is a competitor. Press conference, I don't know if you guys saw today the video that going around where he's like, yeah, some guys are like, dude, you went to like a dark place. Like you, like, you know, when they tied it back up, it was like, whoa, like that's scary, you know? And Stafford is like, hey, yeah, sometimes you got to like, go to the, you know, you gotta go to some dark spots to pull like that kind of a performance out of you. You need to make plays like those, you know, like sometimes you gotta like, you know, like turn into the werewolf sort of a thing. And I think his sort of demeanor and appearance kind of doesn't let on what kind of a competitor it is, how much it means to him to want to win this year. And actually, I hadn't even really thought of post this year Matthew Stafford in LA. Like this has felt so all in from McVay, from Stafford, from, you know, the all the guys they're trading for and signing for off the street, you know, bring in Eric Weddle. Like this feels so all in, such a like 1 year shot at it. Like, okay, well, like what if it works? What if it almost works? You know, if they win this, if they get to the Super Bowl, win or no, you have to be like, all right, well, they did what they set out to do, right? Like this is a chance to get back to the Super Bowl. This is a chance to get over the hump and prove that Sean McVay wasn't the smartest guy in football for a season and a half, or for like a season, a postseason, a regular season, and one game short, and then like they figured him out, right? Like we can safely say Sean McVay can still coach well, and that, you know, Matthew Stafford was, you know, being held back by a situation in Detroit. You know, he is slaughtering all of his personal records, slaughtering all of his personal demons, and getting to the, you know, if he gets to the Super Bowl, like, you go, okay, great. And then it's like, what does happen after that? Because he's not that old, especially compared to some of his contemporaries. He's got a lot of time left, and he has had some harder years and some more injuries. And remember, we were calling him the China doll two or three years into his career. You know, maybe he doesn't have 44 in him. Maybe he doesn't have 40 in him. Maybe he doesn't even have 38 in him. If he plays to 36, 37, and they stay at LA, and this keeps working out, there's this whole, like, second phase of Matthew Stafford's career. He thinks he's playing to 40. You know, they asked him at press conference, that, you know, after he turned 30, like, hey, you're, like, halfway done, right? And he's like, I don't think I'm halfway done. Like, I got plenty of time left, you know? So, like, Those total numbers might start to come down a little bit. I actually did a thing for 538 a few years ago, trying to project out passing totals. I think I wrote it in 2016, and it's called Here's What the NFL Career Leaderboard, Passing Leaderboard Will Look Like in 2025. And it's already super wrong, but it is kind of a fascinating look to see like how many all-time greats are just not even gonna rank. Like when I came of football awareness age, Fran Tarkenton was still the all-time career passing leader, and that dude is not even gonna be like top 50 by the time like my kids are all in college. It's like this is in one generation, you're basically doubling all the big numbers because of how much the game has changed and how long these guys are playing for and how good they are. And I think it is going to be hard to kind of properly scale some of these players who are great players, who some of these Jim Kellys and Dan Marinos, where they aren't automatically included on here are the list of guys who won rings.
And what are we doing with Stafford if he never wins anything?
Yeah.
I mean, is that the next conversation? Like, yeah, then who is Matthew Stafford and all this? You know?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I touched a lot of bases there, but that's kind of a thing. Like, okay, so post this Matthew Stafford, if they, you know, don't, if they lose to the 49ers, they make it to the Super Bowl and lose, presumably to the Chiefs at this point, but I am not counting the Bengals out. Then at that point, you know, he's still got years. He's still got time. you know, the Rams have gone all in, but they're not $44 million over the cap. They're not going to have to let all these pieces walk. You know, they're not going to have to kick Cooper Kupp out the door. They're not going to have to, you know, cut Jalen Ramsey. You know, this is not the same situation. And so you start to go, okay, well, like, maybe there is phase two of Matthew Stafford. Maybe this is a 3-4-5 year run. And then Sean McVay, you know, entrenches himself as, nope, you get to keep being boy genius for 3-4-5 more years, as opposed to where if they had gone all in and lost against Tampa Bay or lost against Arizona the week before, especially, yeah, Stan Kroenke goes, hey, I've got a lot of money. I can hire a lot of other people. And you know, if you're not gonna cash in for me, Sean McVay, like, maybe it's time to change scenery. Now, I don't think we're talking about any of that. I think we're talking about 2, 3, 4, 5 more years of the Rams being one of the best teams in the league, which I'm not sure anybody was really prepared to consider.
Well, and part of that is because this is the mercenary build,
yeah,
right? Like what they did, like we call this is the mercenary team, which is usually not something that's sustainable. So at what point does that like mercenary style of team building, if you can keep it going, become something else, something we don't really have a word for yet? Because they're not going to be a one and done, like whether they win this year or whether they get booted by the 49ers, they're going to be back. They're going to have a lot more shots at this. There's no reason to think that anybody is going anywhere. And as weird as it is to, and every year during the draft, we all go, oh God, the Rams, they don't have any draft picks. What a disaster. You know, and they just keep kicking the can down the road, but it's working for them. So like, at what point do we kind of have to establish a new term for this type of team building? And of course, my big question, and I know we're getting to the end here, but I'm just curious about you guys' thoughts. Like, if this works, if they win the Super Bowl, do we see more teams start to do this? Like, you know what? Like, the hell with the draft picks? Like, we're going to build another way.
So that is literally, I covered this on my notebook this morning for PickWatch.
Oh, yes. Okay.
You know, as part of my weekly, you know, I do my Peter King style column. I do the Shoddy Six, and this week's was like 6 teams that could potentially try this new like what the Buccaneers did last season, what the Rams did this season, this new like sort of mercenary super team style build where you stop doing homegrown talent and you start, you know, throwing draft picks at free or at trades. You start doing the free agent thing. And there are some teams out there that I think, you know, when you look at a team like Philadelphia, who's got 3 draft picks in the top 20, like, do they use all 3 draft picks? Maybe. Or maybe they look at what the Rams are doing and say, let's trade 2 of those. Let's bring in like a Marcus Davenport from New Orleans because they can afford to keep half their roster. And do we start trading for pass rushers rather than drafting yet another one? Do we start trading for wide receivers rather than drafting yet another one? You know, I think they're really compelling. I think a team like Miami is super compelling, like depending on what they do at head coach. You know, I could see a lot of players wanting to go play on South Beach, play with no income tax. I could see Denver, you know, if Denver ends up getting a Aaron Rodgers type quarterback like they're looking for, I think I even put Cleveland on the list for the same exact reason. If you're one of those teams that looks like you're a quarterback away and you get that quarterback, do you then also attract sort of the same players that Tom Brady attracted to Tampa Bay or some of the same players that Matthew Stafford attracted to Los Angeles? I think if you end up being a Denver with, you know, potentially getting Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, or you're Cleveland potentially getting an Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, or even a Kirk Cousins, I've heard. If you're getting one of those players, does there like become an orbit where, you know, other players start to want to come over and play for a team that's going to be good? And I think there's something to be said for, we might see 1 or 2 mercenary attempts this offseason. And I think it's worth saying, we saw it with the Colts. The Colts absolutely attempted to do the same thing and just didn't connect. And so we'll probably end up seeing 2 or 3 more teams attempt at this offseason and maybe 1 or 2.
Well, Denver was kind of the original mercenary team, the Peyton Manning Broncos.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you know, that's part, hey, and like Von Miller was an organic part of that team who then joined another one, right?
So all you gotta do if you want to do this is be the next owner of okay Von Miller.
Yeah.
Where is he going? Yeah. Next.
Okay, yeah, no, and it's it does take some confluence, certainly. And, you know, even the very first set of free agency, you know, where we had everyone was trying to be a Dallas Cowboy or a San Francisco 49er because they had the two quarterbacks, they had the coaches, they had the talent base. And, you know, hey, you want to take less to come on and win a ring? You know, hey, you want to take less to switch teams from one to the other and go win a ring? You know, jump on this bus. Like,
oh, the Deion bounce. All right.
The Deion bounce, for sure. But there were others. Didn't Ken Norton Jr. do that too?
Yes, he did.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm sure there were others because these are the two games in town, you know? But I don't think building through the draft will ever not be important. But I think this may be a bit of a necessary corrective on the, you know, hey, look, if you wanna take a 40% shot at drafting the rookie quarterback that becomes your franchise guy, minimum asking price is 3 firsts. You know, like, wait, hang on. Like, the rookie quarterbacks are not that valuable. Like they're valuable when you hit on them. They're the moon, the sun, and the sky when you hit on them. But you don't hit on them that often every single year, you know? And if you've got a gut, your entire chance to win for the next 2 or 3 years to go up and take a swing on this lottery ticket. At what point do you go to reference a conversation we had before on 3 takeaways? No, you know what? Let's go get Ryan Tannehill. if we can throw like a first, or you throw like a third and the next year, like a conditional second, and we can get Tannehill. Why are we drafting a guy that's like, yeah, if everything goes right, he could be like a Tannehill type, you know, at the bottom of the top 10 and trade a bunch of other picks to do it. And, you know, sign him to a big guaranteed contract. Like, no, like let's just go get somebody who's a known quantity. And same thing at other positions. If you have a hole and you're sitting there like, well, I need to fill holes. Okay. Well, like the rookies are probably not going to fill the holes for you. Like, unless your hole is kicker and you draft Evan McPherson in the 5th round, you know, the number of rookies that step in and play like quality veterans is very, very low. So if you're close, or you think you're close, and the players out there on the market happen to fit the holes that you have in your roster, or the players that are potentially game-changing, difference-making players are ones you have personal relationships with and you know will come, or you've been talking, you know, wink, wink, not tampering behind the scenes theoretically for years, and hey, we always wanted to work together, now we have that chance. I think it's an opportunity, but I don't think it's a thing where this is the new blueprint and you can have Bill Belichick tried to do it this year, right? Like, he swiped a credit card down the middle of the free agency market and got like 12 guys. And
I mean, he didn't go to Cabo with Sean McVay. That's clearly how it works.
Clearly. All right, well, guys, it's 10:03. We have our own personal Cabos to retreat to for the evening. You guys have been awesome. It's great to chop it up with you guys, even though we don't have live football to talk about. But this live talk will go in our feed, in our podcast feed on 3 and Out. Wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iHeart, Overcast, Castro, all the casts, wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you give us a rating there. Spotify just added ratings. Go give us a 5-star there. We're all 5 stars at Apple Podcasts. We'd love to keep being all 5 stars everywhere else too. And of course, thank you for joining us here on Halftime. We'll be back next week at 9 ET Monday night, just like we always are. We are 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast.